Blog Talk Radio.
Peace to the ancestors. Yes. Peace to Dr. Cornell West. Yes. Peace to the movement. Yes. We came from the bottom. Ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind, and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob us, slang. Now we locked up again. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states. Working your forms, black nannies carrying white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your wars, but you don't never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? You never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I'm willing to get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Case scenario, might work till a couple of quirks. Can't call it pancakes cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the road is still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, races go. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland security, now there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still riding, still obliging, still no Bin Laden. Tuned in waiting for the president's announcements. No 40 acres, take these 40 ounces. We ain't gon' get on the levees. Revolution televised early.
America,
is you ready?
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
Forced to climb, instead of have your back, have you beat and lost your mind, especially when you done been down for so much time, getting up don't even really ever force your mind, you got pawn shop, gun shop, liquor store sign, SWAT team, crack fiend, unemployed line, stay late, dollar short, trying to buy time, what we do to survive, is defined as a life of crime, you can't ball, then you forced to grind, if you fall, then you cross the line, and I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9, since phone calls cost a dime, what it made me is one of the relevant, highly intelligent. Brothers not only dealing with that same drug selling. If I'm a hustler, then what's more American? We all founded on the same drug heritage.
America, why you wanna treat me so cold? America,
Dr. Mary Lee Live. We're going to be talking about some exciting things tonight. The music you just heard was by Dr. Cornell West, placed back in 2007 on Hidden Beats Records. The first rapper you heard was I Riz the Moment, my youngest son, followed by Rod Digga, Black Thought, and of course Dr. Cornell West. Music was produced by my oldest son, Corey Cookie Tatum. The co-host of tonight will be Dr. James Cannon, the father of entertainer Nick Cannon. Nick Cannon is our ambassador for HR 1242, Michael Tynes, and of course our host for the night show is Dr. Mary Lee. We're going to be talking about reuniting black family, why is family important in black community, what roles does family play in black culture, how might black families thrive, what are some challenges you faced as a black family, how will you prepare your son or your daughter differently to deal with internationalized racism, institutionalized racism in their lives and career. We're going to be hearing from Mrs. Marilyn Ross Golden. She's a retired teacher, born-again Christian. She was a teacher of the year. Before I bring her on, we're going to bring on Michael Tynes as he introduced our co-host and Dr. Mary Lee. I'm Dr. Tatum from the West Coast in California. Welcome to Dr. Mary Lee Live.
Thank you so much, Dr. Tatum, for the introduction. This is Dr. Mary Lee, and we're just happy that you're here with us tonight. Michael is not here with us. We will have Dr. Cannon with us later on. Again, we welcome you. We're here tonight, and we're speaking on reuniting the black family. So anytime something you see RE in front of it, it once was, and now it's changed, and we want to bring it back. Mrs. Marilyn Golden, Ross Golden, you are live, so I want you to just say hello. I want to be certain that you can hear us and we can hear you. We tried to speak with you earlier, and your line kept dropping, so we'd like to know if you're here. Can you hear us now? Mrs. Marilyn Ross Golden. Phone to see if it's on mute. But we can't hear you if you are speaking. But we do know that you're here. Okay, it dropped again. I have no idea. Do we have Taylor Longs on or Dr. Longs? The line is open on our side of the board anyways. Okay, who is 248 four digits 5020? Can you speak, please? Let us know who you are. Okay, 248 last four digits, 7974.
That's me.
Yeah.
Taylor Long. Hi.
Okay, Taylor. Okay, great. Thank you for joining us tonight. So yes, you're very welcome. We don't really know, you know, what has happened with Mrs. Marilyn Golden line. And each time she's not hearing us, but we're going to move on. I want to welcome our special guest. You know, we have for the past 3 weeks. Well, this is the third week that we've had, you know, featured our young people, you know, to come in and discuss with us their positions and feelings regarding several different topics. And this week is the final segment. Conversation. And so tonight we are talking about reuniting the black family. Okay, I'm going to try to get, okay, Mrs. Golden, Mrs. Ross, Marilyn, can you hear us?
I can hear you, Dr. Mary. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you for joining us, and we apologize for your phone keep dropping. I don't know why. But I'm so happy that you're here. We welcome you, and we're excited about, you know, what you bring to us tonight. I think we're going to start with Ms. Taylor Long to discuss the reuniting of black families. And those of us who are a little bit older, some of us have experienced times when, you know, we were just so tightly knit. And as families, you know, including our immediate families, our extended families, our cousins, and we grew up so very close and, you know, caring and really, you know, loving on one another. And but somewhere, I mean, traditionally, black people are very family-oriented. Something happened along the way. And so I'd like to, you know, to the point where as many families, you know, immediate families are not speaking to each other or, you know, live so far away from one another that we don't get to see each other very often. And, you know, so there are a lot of things going on in our families that have kept us apart, job differences, and just, you know, second, third, and fourth generations who are continually just separating. And so we want to talk about reasons why, what we can do, what we're not doing, you know, solutions to this. So starting with, I want to ask Taylor Longs to come on and, you know, just introduce yourself, who you are, what you're doing, and, you know, how you feel, and if you have any history to include regarding the black family, please do so. Taylor Longs.
Yes. Hello, everybody. My name is Taylor Longs. I'm a 24-year-old college student currently attending Howard University, and I'm originally from Detroit, Michigan, but living in the DMV, D.C. area. I'm so excited to be here tonight speaking with Dr. Mary Lee about reuniting the black family and just aiding our community in a more positive direction. A little bit of background just about my family, that I come from a upper middle class black family, grew up in Bloomfield Hills going to school in a predominantly white area. So family was something that was very important to keep intact and to keep as a solid foundation for me growing up as a child in that type of environment. So now I'm also the product of divorce. My parents got divorced when I was around 12 years old. So this topic of reuniting the black family does hit a different sense of home for me. And I think that there's many different paradigms of ways that we can reunite the black family. It doesn't have to just be written in one certain mind frame or in one perspective. So I'm excited to kind of branch upon different ways that we can work towards reuniting black families, whether it be from personal experience with my own family and how we've grown to get in better times of whether it be co-parenting or relationships between siblings and parent relationships and everything that entails within the black family. So I'd love to hear from other people on this panel, and I'm excited for this conversation.
Thank you. Thank you so very much. Mrs. Marilyn Ross-Golden, if you could share with us your background and, you know, history and what you know of, you know, regarding the black family, particularly the history from, you know, our African roots, and your family perspective, Ms. Marilyn. Mrs. Marilyn. Mrs. Marilyn. Okay. Dr. Tatum, you would speak to us, please. And Mrs. Marilyn, when your line Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here, Dr. Lee.
Okay. Okay, Mrs. Maryland, if you would tap one so we can come back to you, I would appreciate it. Okay, Dr. Tatum.
Yes, ma'am.
Maybe from you're a pastor, and I'm certain you've seen a lot. And so we'd love to hear what you would have to say on this.
Yes, I think I mentioned last week. Well, tomorrow I'll be facing 43 years of marriage. When I married my wife, she was 17 years old. I was 19, and she was a high school sweetheart. Ironically, her mom had to sign for her in the state of California, and we'll be celebrating our 43 years of marriage tomorrow. We have three kids, two young men and one young lady, and nine grandkids. And out of the nine grandkids, we have eight boys and one girl. So I'm really interested in the black family, and particularly the African-American male, because we have eight grandsons who wanted to succeed in America without being a part of that statistics of dying before they turn 25 years old.
Okay. So you tell us what have been some of your experiences in dealing with as a pastor, you know, family situations. I mean, what would you say is the difference between, years ago when you and your wife were married and how you live versus how some of the situations that have occurred, you know, during your pastoralship with families?
Amen. One of the biggest things, Dr. Lee, is we didn't have social media, and I know you could probably attest to that. Many of us didn't have that, so it plays a lot of indignates as far as being indignated with all that information. It causes confusion and disinformation, and so a lot of these young people that do get married, they're listening to sources that are not real good sources or good outlets. So dealing with the black family, we don't have that Sunday afternoon dinner or where family come together where you have your uncles, your grandma. We don't have that nucleus family. So you're getting information from different sources, and that continuity is lost. So I think if we go back to how the families used to do. I was born in 59, grew up in the 60s back east. I was born in the South, then moved to California in 1970. We always have family gatherings, be able to pass down this information, disseminate it to our kids and our grandkids. We have lost that continuity, and I think that's what we need to get back. We need to get off of social media and just have a once-a-week talk, even if you use social media like Zoom to have a family talk if you're separated by, you know, states or cities. But you need to come together and understand who your family is and the dynamics of how important it is to have the patriarch, you know, that grandfather, the matriarch, that grandmother. That information is going to carry you into the next centuries. So, Dr. Lee, as a pastor, I'm noticing that I'm dealing with situations where the grandmothers now are doing the same things as the daughters, trying to compete with them, whether they are dressed like them, you know, going to the clubs like them. They don't want to get old, not facing the reality that God has blessed them to be middle-aged or be senior. Now, I just had a birthday. I turned 62. I embraced that. Because now, you know, I can bring something to the table. I just lost both of my parents, mother a couple of months ago. She was 86. My father died in 2019. He was 85. But they lived a great, fruitful life and was able to pass information on. So as a pastor, we're watching a lot of things happening. I got to do a funeral, unfortunately, in a couple of weeks of a young man, a young African-American male. He was shot 7 times. By another African-American male who was only 20 years old, both of them dating the same lady, and it made the news. And so we're dealing with stuff like that we're not respecting and understanding what courtship is about and how to really understand the family dynamic.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Thank you so much. Mrs. Maryland, Ross Golden, your line is open. We'd like to hear from you. Mrs. Golden, we see that you're back. Mrs. Golden, you're there.
You can hear me?
I can. We can hear you now.
Oh, wonderful. Good evening, everybody. I am Marilyn Ross Golden, and as stated before, I am a retired teacher, and I'm so excited and so happy that I was invited to appear on this very important subject matter. And family is extremely important. I am from a family of 12. I am number 11. All of my siblings have retired except the youngest, and she's still teaching. And the closeness is important. I heard somebody talk earlier about the closeness of cousins. My mother's sisters were our mothers. So that made our cousins very close to us. But I think we must go back, and there's a church song that states, go back to the old landmark. I think we need to go and return to those things that worked for our ancestors. And those were three simple things. And if we're deeply rooted in those things, we can't go wrong as a black family. And that is family, church, and school.
Okay. And what do you mean by each?
I'm sorry?
And what do you mean by each? Could you expand on what you mean by family, church, and school? What do we need to do?
In terms of the church, if we look at what took place with our ancestors, the church was, for and still is in many instances, the centerpiece of the black family. It was where we went to for community. Our ministers and our pastors were not only ministers, but they were also leaders in the community. And the church was also a place for learning for us, for socialization. And also it was that political organization. And with education with our ancestors, shortly after blacks were released from slavery, schools were being reformed. And as a result, many historically black colleges and universities popped up to educate our black people. The family is important. Fathers are important. Mothers are important. Grandparents are important, because many grandparents, even still today, when they step in the role when mothers and fathers have to go work to help take care of the children.
Right. Thank you. Thank you so much. Remember to tap one of your phones and, for your comments. And we, 269, last 4-8-3-8-6. Can you tell us who you are? Is this Mrs. Kirkland? Ms. Kirkland? Your last four digits are 8386. Okay, 8386. Oh, okay, so you're on here twice for some reason. Okay, no problem at all.
Okay,
so we'd like to ask Taylor to Taylor Longs to come back and chime in on some of the remarks that have already been made. We want to know your perspective.
Yes, hello. So I have a little bit of perspective on a few different things. I do agree a lot and with some of the things that were said, especially hearing it from an older perspective. As a 24-year-old who's basically glued to their phone, hearing that we do need to take a lot of time to kind of disengage and detox from social media in order to reunite our families is something that's very interesting to me, because I feel like a lot of times we only connect through our phone, maybe it be FaceTime or Zoom, especially with the pandemic that's still ongoing. I feel as though we get so locked in with maybe the presentation of our lives that we're putting out on social media that we're not truly checking in on the people that matter in our lives, and we're more so caring about their feed and what are they posting, what are they uploading, instead of actually understanding and trying to hear them out for what they're going through in real life, not what they're just displaying on a screen. So that's something that really touched my perspective, because it's so prevalent with social media right now. It rules our society, it rules a lot of our emotions and everything else, and the root of family is love and emotion and expressing that. So I think that if we kind of dial back from expressing it so much from a virtual standpoint and try and fill that void of reuniting the family in a different way, in a more in-person and in a more personable way, that can really aid towards preserving the Black family again. And I also, speaking with I don't know who it was that spoke about cousins and the relationship that comes from outside of your immediate family, but that's something I can also touch on. My father has, I don't want to get the number wrong, but I believe 5 or 6 siblings, and they all have children of their own that, even though we live in the same, we grew up all in Michigan, all of us grew up in Michigan, and I think now that I've moved away and live in a different state that's, you know, 8-10 hours away, and I'm getting older, and my cousins are getting older, and cousins are having kids, and there's cousins everywhere and different branches of family. It's something that really makes me think about how important life is and how important watching life is, watching people grow up, watching people change, and watching people grow. And it's made me think about how much I need to pour back into the cousins that I have, even if our parents aren't the ones that are connecting us, because I think that's also an issue within the Black family unit. We sometimes, if we're younger, we kind of have to look up to an auntie or look up to our mom to connect us with other people in our family, or even other grandparents. Like some young Black kids feel as though they need to go through their mom or their dad to speak to their grandparent, when really we can make those connections ourselves and really learn so much about our family history and lineage through just oral stories being passed down. So there's a lot of different things that I've taken away from the comments that have been made, but I'd love to hear more from everyone else as well.
Okay, in your own family, you mentioned, about, the cousins and they're being, distance. And you also mentioned earlier about the divorce, and how, based on what you, some of the things that you've gone through with, what would you suggest to young people? Is there something that young people can do or help or to help reunite or mend hurts and pain? I do work with a gentleman, and I was hoping that he would be on tonight, who has a bad experience, with losing of two sons to suicide. And things go through people's minds, things go through children's minds and young people's minds, and how would you say a young person can express themselves to their family, particularly like now, with the social media?
Right. So that's a very important subject, and it's something that actually came up in my own personal life this past week, and really trying to expand feeling comfortable speaking about mental health within Black families is such a taboo subject. And I think for me, it becomes ironic because having a father that is a psychiatrist, you would kind of think that I'd be keen or eager to just, you know, express myself or be able to do that. But I found that to be very difficult throughout my adolescence because I think a lot of Black kids with parents that work long hours or just work hard to provide for families, we feel as though when they come home, they're trying to remove themselves from any type of drama or emotion that they have to deal with, and they just want to be in a sense of peace. So for me, it was a little hard for me to get to a point of being able to talk to my parents openly about things that I deal with well into my 20s, because I always felt as though the things that they were dealing with outside of the home when it came to work, especially being centered around medicine, that they had so much going on that if I had an issue with my anxiety or something like that, then you already had patients from 9 to 6 p.m. today to deal with those topics. So I'd rather just, you know, tell you that I got my homework done and that dinner was good and push everything down or bottle everything away. So my advice for young Black kids dealing with those same things is to really just get over that fear of expressing yourself. It can feel like a lump in your throat. It can feel like the hardest thing you're ever going to do. But we can't evolve as a community and as Black people unless we start listening and start really understanding that people that care about you will be there to listen no matter what it is that you have to say and no matter what it is that you are ashamed or that you might regret upholding or like you might regret withholding it from the people that love you. And I think that it's very important that young Black kids find their voice within themselves and kind of understand what they want to say before they do communicate it, because a lot of things can be misconstrued. A lot of things can be not taken as seriously as they really are. So I think that it's very important to gather your own thoughts and to ask that your parents or whoever it is that you're speaking to respect the boundaries that you have when it comes to whatever situation it is, and that they just openly and honestly hear you out, and that they can earn the respect of further conversations that will further opening up and growing through the family, because you've allowed that space of trust and that space of understanding to be at the forefront and the foundation of the Black family.
Thank you. Ms. Marilyn, I'd like your response to Ms. Long's statement here. Ms. Marilyn Ross Golden? Okay, I want to invite anyone listening to tap one on your phone to join this conversation. Anyone listening, tap one on your phone. And if we have Ms. Kirkland or Michael Kirby on, please tap one on your phone so we can open up your line. Mrs. Ross Golden. And Dr. Tatum.
Yeah, I was going to say, Dr. Lee, I was really intrigued with the young lady that's, she says she's 24. She sounds very mature, seasoned to her responses to observing. One of the things that we're missing in the society is young people like her that's observing and becoming aware. They call it woke. She's very woke in the sense of her abilities of what's going around there in this this nation, what's happening with society. Of course, you know, we've been working on that H.R. 1242 to talk about our Black history of 400 years. Unless we step up to the plate to pass this information, disseminate this information about where we come from 400 years in America, we'll lose generations. So just to have this young lady on board is a very promising future for us. So I really enjoyed her comments. I want to encourage her to keep going forth and to have a lot of people emulate what she's doing, and just to go on and have a major podcast of sharing with this younger generation, because we need it here in America. This nation is lacking information because we're getting disinformation, like the Lost Cause what happened after the Civil War. So many gaps in our history. So I applaud her and I salute her and I celebrate her.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, go ahead, Ms. Taylor.
Oh, I just wanted to thank him for hearing me out and really understanding what I'm really trying to build with the youth and understanding that we're not alone, whether you're, the adult in the situation, the kid. I think a lot of times we forget, like on each end, the kids forget what the adults are going through, the adults forget what the kids are going through. So it really just takes talking through those issues to get to a better understanding. So I'm happy that other people are looking towards that goal when it comes to reuniting Black families.
Yeah. Let me tell
you
something real funny. Yeah, I was going to tell you something real funny. I have a 4-year-old. I have 9 grandkids, and other than that, I have 8 grandsons. I have a 4-year-old grandson. My daughter, she has a master's in communications, and we live in California. My 4-year-old grandson, his mother, she told him to stop talking back to her. And my grandson, 4 years old, he said, "I'm not talking back. I'm talking forward."
Wow, I know that's right.
That is interesting. Wow, right. For a 4-year old,
I think it's a testament to our youth becoming more comfortable with their parents because, in all honesty, I think I'm really young still to be 24, but I can think of the way that I was raised, not only by my mother, but extended family. I had a woman by the name of Charlotte Battle that was basically like my grandmother who wasn't blood family, but raised me as if I was her own. And I can think that if I had ever said a comment like that, it would have maybe been considered as back talk or something. But honestly, he was just expressing himself and asking to be heard. So I think that when we come to an understanding that it becomes a balance of respect, because respect is always important when it comes to your family and respecting your elders, respecting your parents. That's number one. But also getting to a point of just confidence in being able to express yourself while also respecting those that love you and care for you and provide for you is very important. So that's very interesting to hear that came out of a 4-year-old's mouth.
Yes, it is. And speaking of respect, what do you define or respect as in a family based on someone mentioned earlier about the patriarchs and the matriarchs and then, you think that respect or of being courteous and this sort of thing changes as a child gets older and, how is a family or parents to teach respect? I mean, where does respect come in?
I don't know if that question was for me or not, but I can only expand on
it. It is for you.
Okay. So
yeah,
I can expand on the fact that I think that respect only changes with age if it wasn't there at the beginning, at the beginning stages. I think I was speaking with that with my mother earlier just about different foundational things that are just kind of etched in my brain that I know are the principles of just being a good upholding person to, help people if you see that they're in need, if you know that you can, and to be kind to people no matter what walk of life that they come from. So I think that if you have young children and you're not teaching them from the youngest age possible to say please, to say thank you, to talk to people if they're in, if they're preschoolers, if they're in kindergarten or anything, to share with their friends and stuff, because as a 24-year-old, there are certain things that I can remember that I did at 6 or 7, whether it be giving my dolls to a little girl that didn't have any when I was playing with her, or something that can be that small or benign is something that can really expand when you become an adult, because now you're getting to a point where you know how to treat people in this world, because this is a very sick and cruel world. It's not as positive as it is when we are kids. We're led to believe that life is
fairy tales, and that's really not the case. And I think that when you have a foundation of family that can ground you in those principles that are so important towards being a good and moral person, then that's all you can really ask for, is just making sure that people are ensuring that you are not going down a bad path that's not aligning with your best self.
So just say if you have, you know, in the family, and you, you know, actually going down the wrong path and not, you know, listening, you know, to the parent, and, you know, then you have this generation today. I mean, our youth seem to be so resistant to information, to instruction or advice. Which definitely separates the family. I mean, how can a parent or, you know, any person in authority, you know, reel a youth back in before, you know, it's gone too far?
I don't know. I guess for me, it's a little different. I never was somebody that was acting out or something like that, but I do have experience with friends or anything like that, or even just understanding some of the things that my dad has relayed to me through patients that he's had in different, you know, nothing specific, but just generalized struggles that kids go through, and the fact that they're not listening to their parents or anyone that's in a position of authority. And I think that, again, there's such a disconnect that, and when a kid feels like they're being berated and like they're being belittled, even though they are in a little position as the child, when you meet a kid in the middle of where they're at and trying to understand why they're acting out, because 9 times out of 10, I believe, just personally, I don't believe that anyone is coherently going to act out. I don't think that someone's just going to choose to wake up and go be a bully or choose to wake up and cause havoc in school. I think that it stems from maybe something that happened the night before, or something that's been lingering on their mind for weeks on end that they're just bottling up. Because I don't think that, again, inherently, I don't think that kids, especially black youth, because as I mentioned, I went to predominantly white schools growing up, and I would notice that kids that would act the same as white kids, whether or not they said a comment in rebuttal to a conversation in the class or something, then they're being not necessarily praised, but they're just being, it's nonchalant when they make a comment like that. But let's say a black kid is expressing himself, or he's not necessarily acting out, but he's talked back the same way that the white kid did. But the white kid's not going to be penalized, but the young black kid will be sent to the principal's office because now he has an attitude, or he's acting out, or he's being delinquent. And I think that when we don't understand what goes on in a child's life outside of the framework of 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. when they're going to school, that you don't understand that there's hours of either turmoil, trauma, heartbreak, you know, any type of pain that these children can be going through. And they have to show up, and they have to still do their tests. They have to still have their homework done. They have to still put on the gym clothes and be ready for, you know, gym class. So I think that when it comes to school or even just anything with a kid growing up and not wanting to be obedient to whoever is in charge of them or whoever is taking after them, I think really just listening and paying attention to the signs in that child. Maybe it's that when dinner is ready, they're not talking, or they're not telling you about their day, or not something. And if you find that they're only resorting to their phone, then clearly they're still expressing how they feel. It's just to someone else. So you need to get to a point where they feel comfortable not having to text their friend or something, but they can just say, hey, mom, you know, I went through this today, and it's really got me feeling this way. Because I've grown to a place, especially with my mother, where I feel as though I can tell her literally anything, absolutely anything. And I know that I won't be judged, I won't be loved any less, and that she will always be there to hear me out and understand me. So everyone definitely has different dynamics within their family. I'm not saying that everyone's going to have the perfect, you know, mom and dad dynamic, because that's just not realistic. But I think that when we meet people where they are, that's something that really helped me in adulthood and accepting parts of my childhood that I may have been triggered by, just understanding that your parents are your parents, but they're also people too. And your kid is your kid, but they're also a person too. So that's my biggest sentiment.
Okay. It looks like we've lost Mrs. Marilyn again. So you're our only special guest here tonight. We don't have Michael on, but, you know, looking at our blacks in regards to, you know, to slavery and what and the type of effect that it over the, you know, over the generations and over the 400 years, it has a type of effect it has taken on the family through, you know, epigenetics, you know, something within our epigenetics that causes us to feel separated. You know, our children, you know, slave owners during slavery, we were separated, you know, from one another, from our history, you know, through slavery. We know most of us don't even know who we are. And we've lost our culture and through all of this, through slavery. And then we were, and, you know, taught to be separated. So part of this reuniting has to involve some type of healing or some type of repairing, you know, within that, you know, the damage that has been done, you know, psychologically that has been passed down from generation to generation. So it seems like it's just so easy for us to, as a people, you know, to become angry with one another and,
right.
You know, turn our backs and I feel, and I'd like to know your feelings, that, you know, it's inherent through most of it from slavery.
I definitely agree. I think, actually in class, I believe this was a class I took freshman year with Dr. Carr, an African Studies class at Howard University, and there was one fact that really stood out to me. There's so many different facts about the Middle Passage that are just so horrific. But it was one thing that stood out to me about black women and being the matriarch, black women and black grandmothers during the time of slavery, and the fact that when they were enslaved and taken and put on the ship, that the colonizers and the white people, they shaved their heads so that originally when they were in mm-hmm. Africa, their style of their braids and the way that their hair was braided was a way for different women to connect and know that they were from the same tribe, understanding that they were from the same lineage and their bloodline. And so that removal of family at such a foundational level, such as our hair is so important in the black community. And that just shows you a way that now why issues within the community around our hair are so centralized, because it's been passed down and rooted in trauma. It's not about, it's something where we had no control over our own autonomy, something that made us who we are, something that connected us, something that allowed us to share traditions passed down, recipes passed down, ancestral stories and history. So I think that everything, of course, ties back to slavery when it comes to the black family being torn apart, because that is the literal beginning of our, you know, our downfall. So I think that when it comes to rebuilding, getting to a point where we're not focusing on the negatives within our family, whether it be negative stereotypes, the baby mother, baby dad, all of those different tropes and all the thing, and understanding that at the end of the day, we just need to build community back up. And I think that doing things that are traditional within black culture, and preserving those things are so important. I know that within the last year, just the holiday with Juneteenth becoming so popular, that makes me so happy, because it's really just a testament to us getting back to our roots and really rebuilding our families through celebration and through admiration and through honoring our ancestors and what they went through, and understanding that we are our ancestors' wildest dreams. We are doing things and we are in positions to create possibilities that our people would have never even imagined. So I think that understanding the root of slavery and how it affects the reuniting of the black family, that's definitely the most important thing that all of us need to really embark on.
Right. And what I like, too, about now, you speak in, when you spoke about the hair and how the braids, actually all of those designs were actually signs, you know, that's, you know, what they used to map out, you know, where to go, which way to go, and freeing ourselves, you know, from slavery. And I think that that's so very important for people to know. And then we got to a point where, so they caught on, you know, the whites caught on. At some point, I do believe that, you know, the hair, that the hair braiding was a, you know, were symbols and, you know, signs of directions for the slaves to free themselves, to the point that, you know, then they started, you know, the media, and I don't know how they started it, but then started creating a shame of our natural beauty, you know, our hair, and particularly braids. It became, there was a time when, you know, black women and girls didn't want to have braids in their hair at all. So, and there was a shaming, I think, that was, you know, that was those planted and seeds. And so we, you know, wanted to make our hair look like, you know, white hair. And, you know, and now, you know, how much more so, you know, we are going back, you know, to the braids. And then another thing, too, you know, extensions are not new. You know, this all started, you know, with our Africans and our ancestors. And it was taken or adopted by the Europeans. You know, they have been, you know, adding extensions. And, you know, of course, we didn't know, you know, years ago, you know, discovered, you know, they didn't have all that hair that was flowing, and the different methods that they had used for extending their hair. And but it actually started with us. And so, you know, the thing with the hair, you know, messages being in the hair, you know, I think that's very, very significant. And then our wearing, I think it's a form of unifying too as well, because of the fact that, you know, we're accepting our hair, and we're doing braids, we're doing extensions. And I know many conversations talk about, you know, false hair, fake hair, and nails and all that. But, you know, during our time, during before slavery, you know, that was a form of art, right?
Yes. I think that our hair has always been ridiculed, but really, in reality, it's such an expression of art and perseverance, because, like you attested to, those were our maps to freedom, literally through our own bodily, you know, attributes. So I think that when we look at the importance of the way that we used to connect, and the way that, like earlier Dr. Tatum has said, just pouring back, or I believe it was him, but that said, just pouring back into tradition and family and understanding and listening to our elders, and really preserving the practices and the traditions that not only come from our personal individual families, but also the diaspora as a whole.
Right, exactly. So, you know, slavery traumatized, you know, our families, you know, our families, the husbands and the wives and the parents and the children, all, you know, you could not protect our men and the mothers,
no one could protect themselves from being separated or sold away from each other. So this separation, and would you say, I mean, as I said earlier, it's easy for us to, wipe our hands, as some old people say, of each other, or not want to be bothered with each other. I mean, because it's been instilled. You know, it's been instilled, you know, through
right.
the separation of the slave and slave families. We couldn't protect one another. And I kind of feel that we've never really gotten over it.
I would agree. I would say that there are so many different sentiments of slavery that still linger within our lineage, and the way that we still are advancing as a people. Don't get me wrong, we're definitely making strides, but there's so many different struggles that are still ingrained within our way of thinking that all, again, I believe tie back to slavery, whether it be the way that women are sexualized, the way that young men are brutalized, both of the ways that young black people and just black people as a whole are affected by the after effects of slavery, and just the way that it affects our entire country. It affects the economy, it affects the housing market, it affects every single aspect of society, whether we know it or not. And I think that if we start paying more attention to the ways that slavery is still intentionally implemented within society, then that's the only way that we can reunite the black family. Because I think about even the project that I have upcoming with my father and the name behind it, and this conversation really just reiterates why that's so important, calling it the Long Passage, not just because my last name and the legacy that that will uphold, but understanding that the Middle Passage is really what disrupted the entire entity of what it meant to be a black person, and just to be oriented in family and to be rooted in love. You know, in Africa, I wasn't there, and none of us were, but I know that as a people, we were solid, we were united, and we had a sense of community that was engulfed in love, and that was so sacred that to have it stripped from us is something that is so hard to repair. We've been working 400 plus years on that, and we're still not as far as we need to be. So I think that's why the platform that I'm creating, calling it the Long Passage, was so important to me, because coming from the Middle Passage, all of that being our origin, but it doesn't have to be our final ending story. You know, that doesn't have to be the way that we define ourselves. I think that through healing and understanding that certain traumas are things that we've developed personally, but also certain traumas are things that we have been passed down through DNA, through slavery and the traumas of those hardships. So I think that getting to a place where we can openly talk about medical terms and different diagnoses and things that we kind of have a little bit of understanding about, but we don't really have a foundation and a defining principles that can reflect our families. Because that's the main thing that I want to do with my upcoming project, is really just to connect black people. There's a way that we all know how to associate with each other. We all know how to connect. We all know how to show love and to admire and honor each other. And that's all I want to do, is just really honor all emotions that we feel, all of the different trials and tribulations that we go through as a people, knowing that we're not alone and that it's not something to be ashamed of. It's something that we should actually appreciate and uplift way more.
What's the mission of your project that you're working on? How does it operate?
So the mission of my project, currently I've been filming YouTube videos, kind of like vlog or just informational episodes that are no longer than 10 minutes. And I really sat down with my dad, knowing that growing up, he used to have all his medical textbooks and other things that I might just scavenge through. And also growing up in an age where, me personally, I feel as though mental health is being talking about way more in recent times. Maybe that's because of the effects of the pandemic or what it may be, but I see that Black people are being more open to talking about those struggles. I think that I was inspired by things by maybe the Red Table Talk with Jada Pinkett Smith. Taraji P. Henson has a Facebook show dedicated to mental health in honor of her father. And I think that I looked at things like that and other podcasts made by young Black creators that I follow or that I go to school with, and people being open to having these conversations. And the one thing that I thought lacked in these conversations was the true information and the definitions of things, things that you would typically get in therapy to be defined, mm-hmm. and things that Google can also define for you, but they may not put experience and relevance and, you know, connection to family at the base of that definition. When you go on Google and you might look up different symptoms to anxiety or PTSD or whatever it may be, you're getting a very concrete definition. But with what I wanted to do with my dad, I wanted to be able to tell stories and to have different guests, hopefully in the future, on to share their different experiences so that we're not just getting a cold, concrete definition of mental health. We're getting something that can make that can help us relate to each other, because we're coming from vulnerability that ultimately will help us all grow and essentially heal. So it's just a YouTube channel that will be coming out with different episodes defining different mental health terms and different solutions for people to know that they're not alone, ways to speak about things. I also wanted to implement that with having a place for children to be able to get on YouTube the same way that they might Google games or look up music and be able to look up how to tell my parents that I'm experiencing depression, or how to tell, you know, my family that I'm being bullied in a certain way, or certain things where they can have real life examples of people that are open and willing to share their stories as much as I am on the platform personally with things I've gone through, and finding people that are willing to open up about things that I haven't experienced that they can willingly shed their light on. So that's really the basis of the project.
Mm-hmm. And that's very, very important, so that people can, you know, youth and you know, people of all ages can understand that you're not the only one who feels this way, or who's experienced, you know, certain types of traumas or bullying, and how you handle it. That's important to be able to share. And, you know, listening skills are important as well. I mean, we can hear what people are saying with our physical ear, but we have to learn how to hear from within. We have to hear a person's heart, you know, with our own hearts. That's very important, because even for healing to take place, you got to hear what a person says. We have to get out of feel what I think and try to hear how the other person feels. And so, and think that were solutions to, you know, for this other, you know, for one another person has experienced. And so I think that that's very, very good. Also, I was wondering, you know, in reuniting the Black family, you know, I feel that history, you know, learning and understanding who we are also helps to reunite us as a family, because, you know, to many of us don't know who our ancestors were. And as a family coming together to identify and learn who our ancestors are, you know, where, what our roots are, and, you know, what type of people were, I think also helped to bring a family together, because with no reference to, you know, with no family reference, you know, who are we? And
right.
And then, Go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead. It was a technical issue. Go ahead.
Okay. And then the saving of, you know, Black grave sites, you know, some of those are have been, you know, broken up and destroyed. And I think that's also a very important you know, for us to know. But some people, you know, I've talked about ancestors, and you know, I've heard, you know, some people say, well, you know, it's not important to them. And, but, it, you know, in my opinion, it really, really is, because it brings a value to know what your ancestors achieved, what were some the successes. It didn't start with slavery. You know, we started as kings and queens and, you know, the leaders, the creators, the inventors. I mean, we built everything. And so I think that's important to get develop a self-worth, you know, via our family, via our family history.
Right. I definitely agree. I think that when we don't understand our history and knowing where we're coming from, then how do we reunite when we don't even know where we first began?
That's right. And if it wasn't important, then we wouldn't have so many people, you know, people looking for friends, I mean family, through ads. You know, I think about how, you know, back in the day I would occasionally see ads where someone was looking for a family member or trying to find out who they are. But now today, you know, I hear so many young people don't seem to be concerned.
Right. I think that it's just, again, a lack of knowledge and a lack of awareness. When you don't care to understand where you come from, it's probably because you never were taught that you came from a place of positivity. A lot of times I think that our youth are led away to not care about family because it's almost been beaten into our heads that, you know, our families are going to, they're going to break up. They're going to either be divorced or they're not going to get married in the first place. And you might be a child of wedlock or you might just be, you know, there's so many different dynamics that can lead someone to not want to connect with their roots and to not want to uphold a sense of community and a sense of family. But I think that when we understand how good connecting with family can feel, that we can really understand that that's the best thing for the fruition of Black people as a whole.
And also the effect of the family separating, you know, through divorce you know, that's also, you know, you experience, you know, disruption of the Black family. But some families end up continuing to be a single parent family, you know, and after, you know, a separation or divorce and lose, you know, the other side of the family, you know, whether it be the father or the mother, and end up having a difficult time being reunited, you know, with that missing parent or being able to understand. There's just so much, you know, I feel that we as a people have to work on. There's a lot. There's an awful lot. We do want to invite our listening audience to tap one on your phone to join the conversation. And so with yourself, what did you find most helpful, you know, during the separation? You were 12. That's a young age. I mean, it's a young age, and it's a transitioning time in your life.
A very transitioning time. I think now, 12 years later, it's something that I can reflect on, and I think it's something that at the time I thought was literally the end of the world. Literally, I thought that the world was ending when I realized my mom was moving out of the house and that there was just going to be all these new changes. But now that I'm older, I think that there is still, I think there's always a sense of resentment that kids of divorce feel, especially, I would just say personally, especially Black kids, because it's not often that Black love is highlighted or showcased for young Black kids. It's not often that positive Black love is showcased for young Black kids. So I think for me personally, to have experienced it up until the age of 12, it was something that I felt like, what is life now? Because I grew up very, very blessed, very privileged. I think, you know, I had both my parents. They were very loving parents, and we had outings. Like, there's so many different things that I could list for you where it just were such positive examples of a true Black family. And to have that stripped away, and to at that time not understand why, because thankfully my parents kept me in a child's place. And a lot of times kids can be even more traumatized when they're in the position of having to hear about the grievances going on between the parents, having to hear the arguments, having, whether they be physical or just verbal, and just all the emotional abuse that can come on both sides from the father or the mother. So I think that for me, I was blessed in a sense to not have to deal with the turmoil of seeing it in reality, but I also think that the sense of not understanding why, and just kind of having to go through the motions of, okay, now mom's moving to this house, and then if she has to move again, and moving multiple times with one parent while also still having a relationship with the other parents that never was strained. I still, for me personally, because of school, I spent 5 days out the week, Monday through Friday, at my dad's house, and then the weekends with my mother. And sometimes that would alternate depending on where my mom moved to, but for the most part, that's the schedule that we were on. And I can remember at that time a lot of people, even a therapist that I had been recommended to see after, because, again, with my father's background, they sent me right to therapy, and rightfully so. I think that it's something, if you're able to do it, that it's very mm-hmm. beneficial. But also there were some effects of outside voices hearing things where, you know, oh, you're going to have two houses and two Christmases and two everything. It's great. And hearing that from maybe adults or older people, and being in a child's place, and you're just not caring about anything material-wise. You just want that mold of a true family to stay intact. You don't care about anything else. So I think that as young Black kids, whether or not you're experiencing being a product of divorce, being a product of separation, being a product of whatever, whatever union that you are a product of, it's something that ultimately it may feel as though it's defining you, but it doesn't, and it's something that you can pivot from and that you can learn from, because you can learn ways to deal with other people. You can learn how to avoid toxicity when it comes to relationships, because you have had to see it for firsthand. So I think that there's two sides. I think that it's something that I now look at as bittersweet. I think that now as an adult I can understand why certain things went the way they did, but as a kid, you are just experiencing it. You're not getting any type of insight to why. You just know that you have to follow suit of how things are, how things pan out. So it's something that I think kids need. In my experience, I think that as the parents go through whatever they go through, always understanding that the child comes first, and understanding that the child has feelings towards what is being, like, what's going on, because they're affected at the end as well.
Yeah, I think it's very important too. You know, families feel so disconnected. You know, even with family reunions, some people won't go to the family reunion, won't attend the family reunion, and, don't consider them important, you know, because they are already so disconnected and from one another. And so I think, I thank God for people,
you know, like in our own family, we had family reunions growing up. Then some of the planners and organizers of the family reunions who encouraged it, one being particularly my dad, you know, when he passed on, and then the family reunion kind of dwindled. You know, I brought them back along with some other family members, and but then some just don't feel like they're so important. But I feel that we as blacks, as African Americans, must become intentional. We have to do things on purpose in order to bring about a family healing. Just like in our family, yeah. You know, so we have to be intentional in order to heal, you know, from whatever type of wounds that we have. We intentionally celebrate each other, you know, because all we were going to and doing were be funerals, and, you know, some we meet up, somebody gets sick, and then we're all at the hospital. Well, I don't think that, you know, we have to do better even within our immediate family as a people, and this includes young people, too. You know, we need our youth to also be intentional about making changes in their own lives, putting forth effort, you know, because, you know, families, you know, one could say, parents could say, well, I need you to do this or help doing that, or, you know, but then they're so busy and they can't help, won't be there for a parent or an older person. But then we have to, at all ages, become more on purpose. You know, on purpose, celebrating each other. That's what we did start doing, you know, some years back. And so we're getting together and we're enjoying each other and having fun. That doesn't mean that, you know, there aren't some differences or some misunderstandings, but it's important to be on purpose. It's important to listen on purpose. You see, it's important to talk on purpose as well. It's everything, I think, in order to help heal our families has to be start being on purpose. And that helps to bring about, you know, a change. And the families back then, I would say back in the day, you know, did do things on purpose. I can recall our family, our immediate family, our extended family, you know, we intentionally got together. We intentionally supported each other. If one was going to the store to shop, we'd call on the other family members. You need to go to the store. Everybody gets together, you know, we need to go to the store and do something. And just do it together. And this being together intentionally, you know, it helps to heal and to, you know, intentionally listen. So we've got Dr. Cannon, your line is open.
Hey, good evening, everybody. Can you hear me? I'm kind of on the roll, but I'm hoping you can hear me pretty good.
Yes, we can.
You know, this conversation, family and relationships, is so valuable, you know, and I think one of the things is that, you know, when the father or the patriarch or the matriarch, the mother of the family, the grandma in the family, establishes those intentional things like you were talking about, and they pass them on and they talk about why it's important. You know, the Jewish community constantly does that, the Italian community. They talk about those things that's important for the family, and the father wants his son to continue. You know, some people in birthdays, if we use birthdays as an example, some families celebrate birthdays really heavy, and then some don't. And, you know, that's what we have to be careful too in appreciating people. If we're going to make one day real valuable for one family member, but then when another family member's birthday, we don't make that much of a big ado, a bigger celebration, and we kind of make it look like we are a respecter of persons in our own relationships. You know, sometimes you can get in a relationship with someone, and their families didn't celebrate birthdays, and they don't know how to receive gifts. They don't know how to receive love. And so they can be abrasive to people giving to them, and they could actually, you know, sabotage a birthday party. You know, no, don't do nothing for my birthday, but really down in their heart, they really want you to do something for their birthday, but they don't know how to express it. But, you know, a wise parent or a wise father, a wise mother will recognize that we got to treat all of the children equally on their birthday, try to make the gift-giving kind of equal so we don't become respecter of persons even with our own children. And I guess what I'm saying is just using birthdays as an example, you know, we can, you know, we need to talk about those issues. Why is this important to you? Is it important, you know, in relationships, those things that people may shut down with when you get too close to a conversation that might be hurting to them? You know, maybe they're, one of their loved ones got their birthday celebration all the time and they didn't get one. And it's kind of hurting to them. And you may never know that. And you may treat them disrespectfully on their birthday, and you didn't realize that that was a pet peeve, that was something that was really harsh to them. I guess what I'm saying is sometimes we shut down because we got hidden pet peeves and hidden things that we haven't talked to people about. And when God brings special people into our lives and they want to talk about certain things we don't want to talk about, we can shut down. And that becomes the problem when we can't talk through our issues. And so I just wanted to kind of share that using birthdays as an example, because to some people, some families, birthdays are extremely important. And then to other people, you know, they don't celebrate it. They don't make a big deal out of it. It's just another day. And, you know, if you misunderstand that with the person that you're dealing with and you treat their birthday just like it's just another day, then that could be really hurting to them. So I'm just using that as an example. You know, we've got a lot of things we can use, but just using birthdays as an example because we all have them. Dr. Lee, I appreciate you, sir. Ma'am.
Thank you so much, Dr. Cannon. I appreciate you. And so it's important, I think, for me, it's just very important to start somewhere, you know, to put forth some effort and to make a change. Because changes won't happen, you know, without it. You know, putting forth an effort, one person doing what they can do. Again, I'm going to ask anyone to tap one on your phone. I hope I'm not missing anyone to join the conversation. So back to, you know, back to Taylor, Ms. Long. Are you still with us, Ms. Taylor?
Hello.
Okay.
Hello.
Okay, good. Yes, yeah. We're kind of winding down. And so, would like for you to, you know, kind of summarize all your thoughts and advice and feelings about what we've been talking about.
Definitely. I just want to thank you, Dr. Mary Lee, for having me on tonight. Thank you, anyone out there that's listening. That's definitely the first part to this topic as a whole, listening and understanding each other and upholding a sense of respect and honor for our ancestors that can ultimately lead us to, you know, really appreciating our current family members more. You touched on so many different topics such as reunions, which is something that personally in my family we don't do. I don't think I've ever been to a family reunion, which is sad and unfortunate, and I'm probably not the only black person that can share that experience, but that's something that can be said for fostering future reunions and just future times for us to really get to know each other and to honor the people that we are, and to love each other and to be kind and really just celebrate life, because we deserve it as black people. We have been through so much as a diaspora, and
ultimately we just deserve to reunite with each other and to be the best selves that we can be so that we can be better for each other. And ultimately, if we're able to reunite our families and to bring that sense of love and joy and restilling that within the bonds and unions that we have, I think that we're going to be all right as a whole. So thank you again so much for tonight.
You're welcome. Now, one thing, anyone in the family, you could start initiating family reunions. As, you know, I said earlier, and it definitely helps to bring, you know, to bring everybody together so that we can learn and know who our relatives are. You know, through those family reunions, I mean, people come that and you really meet new family, meet new relatives and make, you know, create new bonds and that sort of thing. And so, you know, it's anyone, you know, you can start, you know, with people, you know, your family that you know, of course, and because it is a definitely a way. One other quick question I'd like to ask you, you know, in dealing with your divorce and the way that your parents have grown you up and to the fine woman that you are, you know, what would you do? What would you do differently or add to prepare your own children, you know, differently, you know, to deal with, you know, to deal with these types of family matters, as well as institutionalized racism?
Okay, so with my own future family, I think that I would definitely, I'm trying to think of the best answer I could give. I think that I would definitely, I don't want to ever have to deal with divorce, but if that does happen, I think that it's something that I'd sit my children down and really talk to them about what it means, because I think for me personally, it just kind of happened. It wasn't, nothing was explained. And for me personally, I have a brother who's 6 years older than me, and at the time, he was 18, 6 years older than 12, so he was 18, and he was going off to college. So I truly became like the only child in my mind at that point. And I think that if I were to do differently, I think that I make it very evident that separation doesn't mean the end to family as it is defined. It can be defined differently and in different ways, and coping mechanisms is something I also would pass on to my future children, because again, I never spoke about the grievances and the way that I felt about my parents splitting up until I was into adulthood. I was already in my 20s, so I really bottled a lot of the way I felt up, and that manifested in the way that I felt about myself with my own self-esteem, and I didn't really realize that all of that stemmed from something that I had no control over. So I think that with my future kids, I would definitely explain the situation to them, but in a way that doesn't undermine their other parent, because at the end of the day, as the kid, you love them both, and you don't understand the turmoil that they have doesn't translate to how much they love you or how much they equally appreciate you in their own right. So making that point clear is definitely something I think is important. And I think you said institutional racism as well, right?
Yes.
And how would you like me to expand on that? Just any further?
But, you know, certainly you experienced it as a child, and how would you address institutionalized racism differently, you know, to your children, you know, their lives and careers than what's with your own.
Okay, now I get a better understanding. So I would definitely, again, sit and talk with my children. I think that by no means did my parents, they did the best they could by me. You know, I went to one of the best public schools in the Metro Detroit area. and with a lot of, you know, extracurricular activities and different things that allowed me to get to the point where I am today. But I also was engulfed in a world that was so whitewashed that I lost very key implements of myself at a time which, like you said, is so instrumental towards growth and self-confidence and understanding yourself at those pivotal ages of 12 through 18 until I went off to college. Those are the times you're developing and understanding who you are and who you're meant to be. So I think that as far as institutionalized racism, it was something that was such of a norm to me from going to schools with all white kids from first grade to the 12th grade that there were so many aspects of myself that I could not understand or couldn't learn to accept that I didn't realize weren't because of who I was. It was because of what my environment was. So it's not that I never lacked in my blackness. I want to get that very clear. I definitely experienced that through my family and through different family friends and just growing up in Detroit and spending a lot of time in Detroit as a kid back and forth. So I think that it was very important for me to get to a place where I understood that I have worth outside of this white, you know, centralized world that I personally grew up in and that we also live in under the society that we're in currently. So I think that understanding outside yourself, who you are, what you stand for, and where you come from is the most important things to keep sacred towards yourself in trying to live in this world of institutionalized racism and everything else that is, you know, a product of what our people experience.
Right. But thank you. That was excellent.
Thank you.
So, Doctor, you're welcome. You're welcome. You did a great job tonight. And you have so much to offer, so much to give, and I look forward to, you know, hearing more, especially when you get, you know, when you get your project going. Please be in touch so that we can, have others to participate, you know, with your what you've got going, too. So that's
absolutely
important. Yes.
Absolutely.
I
hope to drop that project December 1st, right before the new year, so that we can really expand and educate people all throughout 2022 and to come. So thank you for the opportunity to put my platform out there.
Oh, yes. Please be in touch. You can call me directly, you know, at 571-251-5193. Text, you know, first, so I'll know who you are. That's 571-251-5193. And anyone else out there can also, you know, feel free to text a question or comment or need. Do that, 571-251-5193. So as we're starting to wind down, I want to come back to Dr. Tatum, you know, for your final thoughts and remarks, and then after you, then it'll be Dr. Panna.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Lee. This is a very, very informative show tonight, dealing with reuniting the Black family and institutionalized racism. I definitely experienced in my career. I worked at a company that was one of the top 500 companies in the stock market. And one of my coworkers, pre-2001, he brought in a hangman's noose into the workforce as a joke. I told HR, and they, instead of disciplining him, they disciplined me. And then one of the coworkers that saw the actual rope noose, she recanted and said she did see it. That was 2001. Fast forward 2018, at a company that we were contracted with, NASA, one of the most respectable corporations in the world, a coworker referred to New Hampshire as effing blacks. HR did nothing. So institutionalized racism is alive and well. I'm still fighting that case. This person, only excuse for saying what he said is he said that they did him wrong as an Asian, so he felt that, you know, that same pain he had to pass on to me. He was never disciplined. He was given a pass, and I was retaliated against. This is alive and well, America. It's not blatant that I expressed to you so many clandestine behind the scenes that is done to African Americans on a daily basis. So we got to keep H.R. 1240 story that's not going away. President Biden is dealing with how to deal with the happening in their nation. They don't want to talk about critical race theory. They have a pushback on that. Mm-hmm. They don't want to face back what they've done to us as a people over 400 years.
Right, right. So we have to keep talking about it, and we've got to keep going, and we have to continue to implement solutions and create solutions and work together, you know, reuniting of the family is also reuniting of a people, you know, but we, you know, love starts at home and then it spreads abroad. So it's important for us to do this and, you know, to achieve and accomplish, you know, with our family. Thank you so much, Dr. Tatum. Dr. Tanner.
Outstanding. Can you hear me?
Yes.
You know, when we're thinking about communicating and we're thinking about, you know, the situations we find ourselves in, you know, in a lot of families, you know, children are told, don't tell what's going on in this family. Keep our business here. So a lot of hurts and pains are even in the family. When we think about the fact, though, we have tools that we can reach out to in our communities. We have the black church. We have the black college. And if we flood the black church and we strengthen the Sunday schools and we strengthen the brotherhood meetings and we have the conversations that we need within the structures that we already have, like the black colleges, where we flood the colleges and we make sure that if there are young men or young women in our community, that even if they don't believe they can get to college, we help them believe it, help them get there, and help encourage them to go in there and come out magna cum laude, because it's necessary to take the baton to the next level. When we pick it up from one generation, we want to go do better. You know, so if there's classroom seats that's empty and our young men and young women in our communities could fill those seats, then we need to find them and work with them and do all we can to help encourage them. And if we have to find the money through the black churches, since the black churches is in our community, then we got to ask the black churches to open up a little bit more than three or four times a week, you know, and establish some new projects, some new programs. I think, you know, where we can get the healing that we need, we can learn to communicate with each other better, love each other better. I mean, we can bypass the tools that, you know, our grandparents have established for us in the black colleges and the black churches, and we can walk past them, or we can go in those doors and work along with the pastors and the deacons and the people that's in those churches and help to make it a better establishment, you know. And then once we strengthen the black church, the black colleges, and our kids have flooded the schools and they're getting straight A's, then the other ethnic groups have to respect us all across the board. You know, in Hollywood, they want to make it look like the people that's the beggars on the streets is just the black people. And in a lot of our cities across the country, we see our people. And a lot of times we walk past them and we step over them, and we say somebody should do something. But you know what, y'all? That somebody might be you, might be me. You know, when we see it, God is showing us that somebody need to do something and that somebody might need to be us. And I think if we, again, strengthen the black church, strengthen the black college, it'll strengthen our hand all across the board. Dr. Lee, Dr. Tatum, and to the guests today, it's been an outstanding show tonight. To build our communication, let's use the tools that we have and make them better.
Absolutely, absolutely. We want to start where we are with, you know, the people we have. That's where we start at. That's where you start at, Ms. Long.
Dr. Lee,
with your,
if you don't mind, I wanted to add one last little note that really was inspired by Dr. Cannon's last words in preserving, I 100% agree, preserving the black churches and preserving our black colleges. And as a current student at Howard University, I felt like I could not end this call without showing a call to action and solidarity for my fellow students going through the Blackburn takeover currently at Howard University and protesting housing conditions and other grievances that we are going through as students, and just wanting to be at a point of balance, at a point of understanding with our administration. So I want to shout out on social media at the _live movement, who are really working with students to get everything that we need and are insured for black students, everything that we deserve so that we can be our best selves, get our educations, graduate, get jobs, and become better people in this society and to help other black people advance themselves. So I just want to shout out to those students that are standing in solidarity for the rest of their Howard community and making sure that for future Bison and for future kids, young kids in high school right now that have dreams of going to Howard and all the other amazing HBCUs out there throughout the country, that they are allotted the best and absolute amazing experience that they ultimately deserve. So, again, thank you so much for the opportunity to really showcase and highlight those people that deserve it and those people that need the attention.
You're absolutely more than welcome, more than welcome. This is what we're here for. And anything that we can do, if any of them want to come on and present here on the show,
absolutely.
Just let
I'd love
us know.
To be in touch with that. Absolutely.
Do that. Here again, I want to thank all of you. I appreciate you all so very much. You've just done an outstanding job, Ms. Taylor. And I just, you know, love it, you know, every moment tonight. And I appreciate you. And my co-host, Michael, in his absence, he's working. He's, of course, he's a student as well. So sometimes he needs to take off and work on some of his schoolwork, and which is perfectly understandable. I think this is his last year or his third year. Can't recall. I think this is his last year, but I don't know for certain. But you know, shout out to Michael for your diligence. And I want to thank Dr. Cannon and Dr. Tatum. I love you all. Audience, without you, we're not here. You know, just spread this, spread this show with any and everybody that you know. We have some great things in store that we're working on to bring betterment to this project, and to add and to provide platforms for many, many, many more. Again, I love you. I thank you. Stay safe, and come back next week. God bless you all. Good night.
Peace to God, for the rest. Peace to the movement. We came from the bottom. Ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind, and it's
no promise, and we gon' never actually be equal to be honest. It's messed up how they minutes to change, kidnapped our language to change our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob us plain, now we locked up a game. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states, working your forms. Black nannies carry your white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in the wars, but you don't never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong, you act like you hate my race. The police say just leave us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? You never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I wanna get paid, and nothing round up on my family is shake. Trying to buy time, what we do to survive is defined as a life of crime. You can't fall, then you force the grind. If you fall, then you force the line. And I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9. Since phone calls cost a dime, what it made me is one of the relevant, highly intelligent brothers I was dealing with, the same drugs telling you. If I'm a hustler, let them rush for American. We all gathered on the same drug, let's get.
Why you want it?